Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donald on a Kitchen. My name is Lana Nuchtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgentas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table right here in the middle of KHOI Community Radio's fine studio here on Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames. In Iowa, the center of everything, and we have a good time doing this, and we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donald on a Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For more information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call a pub and ask for Marcus, or just go on over and have a sit down.
Yeah, we will. That's good. So, like I said, this is the Donald on a Kitchen. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And there's always, this time of year, my goodness, there's good things to eat. We, Donna and I, just happened to come across a lovely bottle of mead last weekend.
Right.
Well, okay. what's so good about this?
Okay. So mead is, it's a honey-based liquor that's fermented. It's traditional in Celtic lands. There's a lot of mead done in certain parts of Europe. It's questionably, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's just blah, you know. But Cynthia, our engineer, had some mead that she had been brewing or letting rest for 6 years. Oh, boy, that was, Cynthia, kudos. The best homemade mead I have ever tasted. Yep. It was 6 years old. I don't know. Cynthia, you got to tell us how you let it just sit there for 6 years.
You have to put it in your basement and forget about it. And then when you repaint the basement, you go, oh, wow, I have beer and mead that I have stored away for a long time. And it was a 2013 vintage of homemade mead. I think I put pineapple in it even. I'm not sure.
It was really good, and it had, as I kept saying, the finish of it was very whiskey-like. You know, it was
yeah,
really,
it was complex.
It was really rich, and it, you know, it tasted like a good alcoholic beverage. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
This was for the late great Paul Nelson memorial.
Yes, we did. We had a memorial party here at KHOI, and the mead was presented. It was very, very good, Cynthia.
Very good. And that just goes to show you all good things come to those who wait. And we are thinking about long-term investments here, because today we're going to be talking about apples. And apples are not something you just put in the ground and harvest
right.
the first year.
You got to grow the orchard.
It's planning. And today with us is Steve Carlson. He is with Hall's Orchard as the orchard manager, which is near Madryn. He also is starting his own orchard near Madryn. He is also Practical Farmers of Iowa staff member. He's the membership manager out there. So in between everything else, he has a lot to say today about apples. Welcome to our kitchen.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
And we are in the midst of apple season, one of my favorite times of year. We have a lot of apples around here, a lot of varieties. You can just, even the grocery stores have a lot of local apples. I've just been kind of living off different flavored apples with slices of cheese. That's my favorite. No fuss, no muss, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I've got a stash of some nice cheeses in the walk-in cooler at my orchard
and all kinds of cheeses go with it. You know, you can have a nice cheddar, which is traditional, or even a... Oh, some of the more Middle Eastern ones. All kinds. It's just cheese and apples.
Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong.
So, Steve, tell us about your apple adventures. You are involved in two orchards right now. What's going on?
Yeah. So, currently, I have my own orchard on my property. I've got a little bit of a homestead going on just outside of Madryn with about 5 acres, and currently have 60 to 70 trees planted there, all apple varieties.
And when did you put them in?
And those have been planted about 3 years ago. Every year I plant just a couple more, but originally, the original planting was 3 years ago. So some of those trees just this year produced their first fruit.
Ooh.
And so you know, there was maybe 12 apples out in the whole orchard. And, yeah, so I really babied those along, you know. But so that orchard is very young, and I'm still adding to it, and it's full of a lot of
Steve is very young. He is in the category of beginning farmer. We are very excited that this is happening.
I'm definitely not an expert in this yet, you know, but I've been involved with apple stuff, which we can talk about soon, in a lot of different ways for many years. But this is my first endeavor into growing my own, on my own. And so, yeah, this orchard is just starting to produce a few fruit this year. Next year we'll get a few more. 2 years we should have a decent crop. And so many of these varieties on my orchard are varieties I've never tried before.
They're I got to know. Okay, if you're starting your own orchard and you get to pick what you're planting, how did you choose?
There are thousands and thousands and thousands of apples
out
there.
Absolutely.
So, you got to narrow down your interests and what your goals are, really. And so my interests are a lot in hard cider, and a lot in preserving some of the more rare heirloom heritage varieties that people just don't know about these days. My real passion is trying to help have a collection of these just so we don't lose these heirloom varieties that were really important to a specific community or a specific family for generations. And then nowadays...
Are you sticking to ones that are... Well, obviously they have to grow well in Iowa, but...
Right, yeah. So I do try to look for...
Midwestern varieties?
Yep, I try to look for varieties that are good for the kind of the upper Midwest where we are. So I source a lot of the Scion wood for... my grafting. All the trees I have in my orchard, I've had to hand graft because they mostly don't sell them in catalogs. You know,
what's the rootstock then?
So the rootstock, I experiment again with quite a bit of different kinds of rootstock. But the rootstock is, you know, the material that you graft a cutting onto, and that determines the size of the tree, the vigor of the tree, the disease resistance.
So you had to put the rootstock in. You didn't get an existing orchard, right?
The rootstock I order from nurseries, and there's a huge selection of rootstock out there, and mostly people choose the rootstock depending on the size of the tree that they want. So going from a dwarf tree all the way to a standard size tree. And so I've got a lot of semi-dwarf trees, which...
Did you standardize the rootstock so it's the same for most of the orchard?
So
let's get it complicated.
My orchard is all
Woo-hoo!
Over the place. Yeah, it's really
an
experiment.
It's your orchard. You get to do what you want.
Yeah, it's a collection. And, you know, the idea is kind of maybe to find a good variety of apple that I really enjoy, that grows really well in my area, and also a rootstock that seems to be hardy and that seems to take well to different kinds. And so, you know, out of my 70 trees, I might continue to grow my collection until I completely run out of space, which will be pretty soon here. I'll run out of space.
Well, maybe you can get more land, Steve.
Exactly.
That's always the idea, right?
Maybe if I find that perfect combination of rootstock and variety that I want to really expand on and do like some major production for some hard cider, then this collection will help me make those decisions.
Right. So can you tell me what the difference is between a cider apple and a...
So it's basically what they call eaters and spitters. The cider varieties are just so naturally bitter and sharp. And
see, they don't taste particularly good. No.
Right, yeah. And so if you take a bite out of an apple and just feel the need to spit it out immediately, then it's probably pretty good for hard cider.
That's good to know. Everything has its place. I do like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So
you're growing cider apple, and we're looking forward to that. What a wonderful thing to experiment with, and it's a long-term thing. Good for you. But you're also involved in another orchard that has eating apples. Tell us about that.
Right, yeah. So just this year is my first time doing the full production management at this existing orchard that is called Hall's Orchard on the other side of Madrid. And
how many acres is that?
That is about 350 trees on, you know, almost 5 acres. And
so that is a piece of work.
Yeah, there's a lot of trees there, and they were planted for the most part about 30 years ago. So some trees are a little bit younger as the trees die. They've replaced a few. So the orchard itself has been around for about 30 years now, and a lot of those varieties are, as Lana said, good for fresh eating, and those are kind of your standard apples that you might see in grocery stores. Some of them are a little more rare, but those are your fresh eating
varieties. And they
varieties.
Have an established market to
yes,
sell into.
Yes, they do. And so Being a smaller, you know, rural orchard, they sell primarily on a on-farm apple store there. And so, and then they have some retail outlets locally, that, and I've built a few more retail outlets. So the Halls basically planted this orchard 30 years ago when they both had retired. And so they were able to run this store, you know, every day, you know, Monday through Sunday, and be available there, you know, to take customers. And so now that I'm taking over the management, I work full time, and I've had to make some changes to the business, you know, and so now I'm just open in the on-farm store Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And so I take it they have completely retired from the picture.
Right. Well, that was the idea, but of course Rex is out there helping me quite a bit.
And well, that's so good. That's you know, that's going to help you learn.
Exactly.
He probably knows his orchard.
He does.
Good
and
for you.
I'm learning a whole
good
lot
for Rex.
With having Rex around. So it's been really helpful that he hasn't entirely stepped back. You know, he's been there to help me throughout the whole process, going back from pruning all of the trees back last winter during the dormant season, and then doing all the management throughout the season. He's been there to help me out. So I don't know if he intended to completely step back, but he's still helping me quite a bit.
Probably can't help himself.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah.
Well, I can see how, even if you think, well, I should retire, I can see how working with apples is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some varieties. I mean, you mentioned the cider apples, but even the eating apples. What are
some
kind of
eaters
things?
Do you have?
Yeah, sure. And so, and then they have some retail outlets locally. That, and I've built a few more retail outlets. So, the Halls basically planted this orchard 30 years ago when they both had retired, and so they were able to run this store, you know, every day, you know, Monday through Sunday, and be available there, you know, to take customers. And so now that I'm taking over the management, I work full time, and I've had to make some changes to the business, you know, and so now I'm just open in the on-farm store Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And
so I take it they have completely retired from the picture.
Right. Well, that was the idea, but of course Rex is out there helping me quite a bit.
And well, that's so good. That's you know, that's going to help you learn. He
exactly.
He probably knows his orchard.
He does.
Good
and
for you.
I'm learning a whole
good
lot
for Rex.
With having Rex around. So it's been really helpful that he hasn't entirely stepped back. You know, he's been there to help me throughout the whole process, going back from pruning all of the trees back last winter during the dormant season, and then doing all the management throughout the season. He's been there.
Let's talk about some varieties. I mean, you mentioned the cider apples, but even the eating apples. What are
some kind
of the
eaters
things?
Do you have?
Yeah, sure. So every week there's been, you know, starting back at the very last week of August up until you know, the last week of October, every week there's something else that's coming into ripeness.
Okay,
into
so they've
production.
Staggered their varieties to make a long season.
Yeah, it's yep. So there are some early season varieties, some late season varieties, and a lot of in-betweeners. And so every week coming out, people who visit the orchard will get something a little bit new that's newly available. And so that's always really exciting. And then certain things, you know, we have to start picking as they look ripe and as they start to drop from the tree, we start picking them, but then realize it's a week later that they actually taste better than the previous week. And so there's, you know, even when you're starting to pick things and they'll sit there in storage, they'll ripen up and be better the next week. And so even if you see a variety on the shelf 1 week and you try it and you think, oh, okay, then come back next week and it's something, same variety, but it just has really reached its peak in the
it
flavors.
Does get better.
So that's always fun.
I have a question. There are some varieties like Granny Smith or Crispin or that – They're sold green. Do they ever turn red?
Yeah. So the grannies,
they do.
We do have Granny Smiths, and I was really surprised to see those were the latest season varieties that we've got. One of the last ones to pick.
Really.
And
they usually sold early green.
Yeah. Right. So we tried as hard as we could to not pick them too early, and so that's the thing. And once they sit out there in the sunlight and continue to ripen, they'll get a red blush on that sun side of the apple. So it's
gorgeous.
See, I want
to try those.
Apple.
I've only ever had green Granny Smiths, and those are notoriously good for cooking. They are a sour apple.
Right. They are sour. So it's good to put into a lot of different apple recipes just to bring that tartness with another sweet variety. But those grannies will get a red blush when they sit out there and they have time to ripen.
Tell us about storing apples, how you store them commercially, and then what the home person should do.
Sure. Well, this is something that I'd like to learn a lot more about. It's at Hall's Orchard. It's set up really nice. We have a walk-in cooler, and so the most ideal space, you know, place and way to store an apple would be to just keep it in cool, dark temperature controlled, so the temperature doesn't fluctuate.
Is that standard refrigerator temperature?
Yeah,
like
we keep, well, it's a little bit
40-ish.
Yeah, 40-ish. Yep. So we try to keep it between 35 and 40, 43-ish, and that most varieties will store for weeks and weeks in those conditions. And then of course it's you know that phrase of like, you know, one bad apple will ruin them all. And so if
yes.
you have a bushel box with 40 pounds of apples, you know, 100 apples, if one of them has a rotten spot in there that you missed, then that will eat away at that apple and then spread to others. And so it's a good idea to be really vigilant about pulling out the culls before you store your apples.
Right. So you don't just set them there and forget about them.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to store in refrigeration, then I've also been told it's great to make sure that there's, and people have different ways of doing this, but some separation so the apples aren't necessarily touching one another. And so whether that's newspaper or some people I think have used sand and
straw.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Or all those, though I don't know if they still do this, those separators at the bottom of fruit boxes.
Yeah.
Oh, the cardboard thing.
Like peach boxes. I've got a little paragraph here I'm going to read from a book called Root Cellaring, Natural Cold Storage of Fruits and Vegetables by Mike and Nancy Bubel. And this has been on my shelf for ages, and I refer to this every now and then. This is what they have to say about apples, and it's what you've been saying, Steve. Apples keep best at 32 degrees Fahrenheit with a relative humidity of 80 to 90%. Near 32 degrees, a humidity reading of 80 to 85% is enough to prevent shriveling. But at higher temperatures, 40 to 50 degrees, the humidity should be closer to 90%. Higher temperatures shorten storage life considerably. If you can keep your storage area cold, you should have apples until spring. If your root cellar temperature remains in the low 40s, you can still store apples. They just won't keep as long. Use them and enjoy them in the fall and early winter. Use them up. And if they become soft, make some baked apples.
Well, and there are apples that are called keepers because they have a longer shelf life.
Oh,
there
right.
are some apples that in your root cellar just are not. They're not going to make it that long.
Sure. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Are we to the keeper season yet?
Yeah, we're getting there. So like right now, I am just about out of the ones that cause me a little of anxiety if they're still in the orchard or in the cooler.
And
you
which
know.
Ones like, are those?
Jonathan is one that just will not store for a really long time. Another one is Yellow Delicious. Any of those varieties that have a little bit of a delicate skin that brews easy.
Okay, those are not my favorites. I don't care. What else are we losing?
Yeah. Yeah, Jonathan's and the Yellow Delicious are the two that I probably worry about the most. The Empires are another one that I think you've had recently, Donna. That is one of my favorite apples, and they
is that the one with the little speckles that I like?
It, I think that is. Yeah,
yeah.
It's they're a smaller apple. They're kind of flatter and wider. You know, they're a little bit of a different shape than like the Red Delicious.
Right, they got a
looking.
Nice tart bite. To
a little
them.
Bit, yeah.
yeah,
just a nice balance of tartness. And those Empires will just start to the flavor starts to go out a little bit as they sit in storage, and then the texture does too eventually. So some of them it's just a texture thing, and this flavor will stay there. And some of them it's you know both that just kind of. Just
yeah. Speaking leave. As someone who has one tree, well, I have two trees, but one tree is an Empire tree, and I've noticed that the first apples. Oh, look, it's red. I'll eat it. No, they're not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wait and you wait. And there has been a long curve of really good eating apples and really good pie apples. And we put up a lot in the freezer and made applesauce. And Donna made apple butter.
Right.
And now, yes, they're kind of, all right, let's just kind of call them done. But they had a nice long run.
Yeah.
A nice long run.
Well, and now at the end, taste this, Steve.
Gladly.
This is Lana's Empire Apple Butter. You've tasted
Ooh.
This, Lana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Now, when I make apple butter, especially if I've got a varietal that I like, I don't really season it. Like some people put, you know, cinnamon and all of that sort of stuff.
And
this, I put just a pinch of salt. and actually a pinch of black pepper, because I always have to put black pepper in all my sweets. And I put a shot of vanilla extract into it.
Oh, really?
I just thought I'm going to mellow it without what I didn't want to do. Cinnamon will cover the flavor kind of a little. Mm-hmm. Then you end up just tasting cinnamon. So I was really working to just hold that apple flavor steady, because that's what you've got.
Well done.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, we can be, what else do you got? We can make, I can make more of this apple. Oh, so apple butter is really easy. You know, you just, I don't even, sometimes I cut them in half just to make sure there are no bad spots, right? That's all you have to do. Mm-hmm. You throw them in a pan. I just put a little water, and then you really steam them down, and what you're going for is applesauce. So then I put it through my food mill, which pulls out all of the core pieces and the seeds and all of that stuff. And then I've got pure applesauce. Then I put it in the slow cooker for up to 24 hours till it just reduces. I mean, it's very simple process.
Right, just a long process. But a lot of it's hands-off.
Yeah, it's long, but it's, and you can do, I don't know. You know, I have a fairly large slow cooker. So, you know, maybe a half bushel at a time.
It's,
so you end up with a nice amount. But what kind of apples you got left?
Okay, so we still have the ones that do store really well. Like one of the favorites that we've still got is Chieftain, and that is actually bred out of Iowa State University back in, I think, like the 40s.
Oh, is it?
So it's one of the most
it's a real Iowa apple.
It's not an heirloom, you know. It was came out of a breeding program, but it is definitely the most local Iowa apple. You know, next to the
we like Chieftains. Okay,
yeah, Chieftains are good. They store well, and that's a Red Delicious crossed with Jonathan. So I always think of that one as essentially an improved Red Delicious, because it does look like Red Delicious, but it just has so much more of the Jonathan, you know,
right. It has
quality
a lot
flavor.
More flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the texture is good. So the Chieftain is a really good one that I've been enjoying lately. Let's see. So right now we still have a lot of Fujis and definitely some Red Delicious, and those ones everybody just gets you know, the wrong idea in their head when you hear about Red Delicious, because we've all had the grocery store Red Delicious apples that are essentially just like cardboard. They've been stored for sometimes 2 or 3 years and shipped from Washington. And,
they're very good for still life. So if you want to paint a grouping, they're very nice.
There's one good characteristic.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Okay, so your Red Delicious are better,
they
right?
have really wonderful flavor, and they store really well. And so, you know, it's not one that sells the most popularly in the Apple store, but they hang around. So people will start buying them because they're still a good local apple. And one of my favorite things is cutting up, you know, slices for anybody who comes in that wants to try anything.
Right.
And so you can change your mind pretty easily having a really fresh, just hand-picked
Red
Delicious. Yeah.
And you must have grannies left, right?
Definitely have some grannies left, yep. And we still do have some more Golden Delicious. Those ones are hanging on. Another late variety that we have a lot of, it's called Rome, Red Rome.
Now, those are good bakers.
Yeah, they are.
Very good bakers.
Yep.
Or it's like the classic, if you want a baked apple, a Rome is the perfect apple to use
for that.
And they're
so beautiful, too.
Yeah,
they're just a pretty looking apple.
Yeah, and they bake up pretty. They stay round, and you can cut the center out and stuff the nuts and the cinnamon and the butter in there. It's very good for them. And pies, you can do pies with them. It's a good cooker.
Yeah. Plenty of Romes. Another one that that we have that I really, really like, and it's a unique one, is called the Wine Sap. And the Wine Sap.
Oh, now you don't see many of those around. Is that an heirloom
that
or
is
just an old one?
It is. Yeah, and there are different kinds. I've heard of a Stamen Wine Sap, and I've heard of the Stamen, and I've heard of a Wine Sap. And so there's a lot of different variations of the Wine Sap out there. But that one is called a Wine Sap because I think, you know, it's a classic variety for making some, like, apple wine or hard cider out of.
So it's tart.
It's an eater.
You can eat them.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Does it cook well also? I have not used it for cooking. It's a very hard apple. So I think if you were to cook with it, it would be for specific things that you would want to keep. I'm sure it would keep its shape.
Now that's important when you're doing pies and things like that, because if your pie turns out to just have applesauce in it, it's not really fun.
Right. But again, along those lines too, with the pie, I always say that it's a good idea to have one that holds its shape and then another apple in there that will sauce out.
So
you have
a little bit of sauce with the
apple, you know, slices in there too. So I think the Wine Sap would be good if paired with another apple.
Maybe a Rome then, huh?
Yeah.
Or a Granny.
Sure, sure.
Or all three. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Have an apple party in there.
Okay, now, okay, here's a critical question. Growing up, everybody has apple pie in their family, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Was yours a cheddar cheese or a vanilla ice cream family?
Vanilla ice cream. Oh. And I love the cheddar cheese, though, when I see it and get a chance to have that on my pie. But, you know, that's just one of those things I did not grow up with. But as an adult, I love it.
Very good.
Okay. What about you, Lana?
I grew up in Wisconsin. We had the cheddar cheese.
Yes.
Slice.
Yeah. Yes, right there. It could be a generational thing, too. I mean, my father was in the dairy business, and we were big ice cream friends. But we also did the cheddar cheese, which... As a child, I went for the ice cream. Mm-hmm. But as an adult, I'm for the cheddar cheese. Now, did they melt it on the pie, or did they just lay a thin layer on the top?
Just lay it.
Lay it on the top.
Or beside it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. May not melt it. But if you're lucky, get it while the pie's still warm.
Well, yeah, because you want the cheese to at least come to room temperature on top of the pie.
Oh, yes.
Because you get maximum flavor way. Right.
See?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
We have got a lot more apple stuff to explore here, but I will take this opportunity to remind you that this is KHOI, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're here with Steve Carlson, and we're talking apples. Donna is so excited she got out a book with the prettiest pictures of apples. Now, you think apple, okay, round red. They're not just round red. There's all kinds, and we're talking varieties with Steve Carlson.
There's thousands of varieties. I mean, Okay, the history of apples are that they came from, was it Kazakhstan?
Yeah.
So it's really an Asian fruit. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they got carried over the Silk Road Trail. In Kazakhstan, before humans were cultivating them at all, they kind of, bears and horses ate apples. That was the deal, right?
Yeah, sure.
And part of that is because the bears and the horse would eat the apple, which has the seed. They would go somewhere else. They would poop the seed out with its little package of fertilizer, and bam, more apple trees. So they did very well before they were in any way cultivated. And then in the Silk Road trade with the horses, they, of course, got carried into Europe. And in Europe, they were quite cultivated all the way, you know, even into the Middle Ages. But then when they got taken to the New World, is because we were still, not every acre was, you know, wildly tended, we were able to just have all kinds of apple explosions here in terms of varieties.
Right.
And
yep. You hear about, you know, the classic story of Johnny Appleseed, who was out, you know, planting orchards by seed, you know, hundreds of trees, with the hopes that one of those will be good and they'll come back in the next year or two and you know, whenever the fruit is in production and find the one tree that's good, and then they can take cuttings from that. Everything else can be used for cider. And
yeah.
So,
we
come up with all kinds of new varieties.
Cuttings are the way to go with apple orchards, right?
So that's you're winning the lottery if you plant apple seeds and hope to get an apple that is good to eat.
Right, because the seed does not breed true necessarily to the mother fruit.
Right, yep. It's similar to humans where you're going to get every seed in one apple is going to give you a different variation of the two parents that pollinated it. And some of them are going to get just all the bad qualities of the parents, and mostly. And then a few of them will get the good qualities.
So does that mean we need to start cuttings for human beings instead,
right,
so we get more predictable breeding?
Oh,
right?
Don't give anybody any ideas.
Okay,
We're already doing that kind of stuff.
All right. talk about grafting.
Yeah,
then,
so that's
how most orchards are.
Right. So when you find a variety that is good and that's worth keeping and worth sharing and worth eating, you take a cutting from that, which is essentially then cloning that tree.
So you just cut a branch at an angle, right?
Yep. And it's a specific part of the branch. You want only the one-year-old growth from the tree. And so you'd take a cutting, which is called scion wood. You take the scion material from an existing tree and you graft it onto a rootstock. And the rootstock
To be an apple, though.
It has to be an apple, yep. And the rootstock will determine the size that the tree will grow to, and then the cutting, the scion wood that you put on it, will determine the fruit that is produced.
Now, I have seen, there was a particular artist, we saw this in Ag Arts. It was a guy that took a rootstock and put multiple kinds of fruit, and especially apples.
Yeah.
So you end up with an apple tree that has six varieties of apples.
Yeah, that's very cool. And that's a really neat way because almost all apple varieties require a different variety of apple to pollinate it. It won't be pollinated by pollen from the same variety.
So if you have a backyard where you can only have one tree, you could still have multiple. I mean, you have to be about this.
Yeah, graft a couple of different limbs onto that one tree so it can pollinate itself.
Ah.
And then also, of course, if you live in town, crabapple trees are excellent pollinators, and those are found all over the place.
Everywhere around town.
If you're growing an apple tree in town, you probably won't have trouble with pollination. But a lot of times, if you only have space for one tree, you could graft a pollinating, you know, limb onto that to pollinate the rest of the tree.
Yeah, speaking of pollinating, who pollinates all this thing? We always hear about the bees, and we're having trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Are you worried about the bees in your orchard?
Just having problems.
Well, yeah. So I have a couple of different thoughts on this. So at my orchard with my heirloom varieties, I've taken 2 acres of an old horse pasture out of production and enrolled it into a prairie pollinator habitat program. And so
you've got to grow your own bees.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And so really the native pollinators are much better at pollinating than honeybees. And so it's the native pollinators that you want to attract, all kinds of different
species
of bees and flies. And
You're
getting a little bit out of my wheelhouse when we talk about the kinds of pollinators that
you don't know what you're growing out there
Exactly. Yeah.
All those little buzzy little things. Actually, they seem to be smaller than than a honeybee, but they're busy.
Right. Yeah, they are busy. And so I'm creating a habitat for native pollinators on my orchard, and so that will just provide me with plenty of pollinators.
Okay, so the habitat is prairie, basically?
Yes, right. It's prairie mix, and the mix was designed specifically for pollinators. And so it's high in forbs and lower in the grass mix, you know.
So more flowers?
Yeah,
more...
a lot more flowers.
So
and flowers
be pretty.
Throughout the entire year. Yeah, so constant flowers. And I, of course, for an apple orchard, need flowers specifically during a, you know, bloom time, which would be typically in May. And so we need early bloomers.
So early bloomers.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Boy, this is quite a science, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I've had a lot of help with that part of
Where does one find this kind of information?
Well, there are Practical Farmers of Iowa is starting to get more involved with habitat. And so if you can look at Practical Farmers of Iowa's resources on our website. But we also work with a lot of organizations that work across the landscape in Iowa to add and preserve pollinator habitat. So I've been working specifically with the Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation.
Mm-hmm.
The Xerces Society helps a lot of farmers and landowners in the Practical Farmers Network.
They're specifically bees, right?
No, well, Xerces is all invertebrates. And so they have a whole section of Xerces that does pollinators. And so that's all a lot more than just bees. So they are, yeah, they do a lot of.
Yeah, Xerces is
right.
With an X.
Yep.
X-E-R-S-E-S.
X-E-R-C-E-S.
C-E-S.
Yep.
Xerces.
Yep. So the Xerces Society is a wealth of information on their website. Almost all that stuff is free. They have guides for, you know, pollinators and a lot of helpful stuff. And then there's, I happen to be dating the Iowa Xerces pollinator expert, so she's designed my seed mix, and she's just taken over everything for me. You know, so
is that how you
that
do
helps
it?
A lot. Yeah, it does.
She's got the inside track. Well,
right.
Okay.
But there are resources for anybody who's interested in doing habitat.
Do you keep beehives as well? Is that a good thing or
I
not
think,
a good thing?
Well, I'm certainly not opposed to it. I having my own honey production on my farm would be fantastic, but that's I have enough going on right now that's going to be maybe down the road. But getting into beekeeping can be, you know, a little bit expensive and time-consuming, and I
but it
haven't
is,
got
it
to
is
that
a
point
heavenly
yet.
Thing.
Mm-hmm. And so on my other orchard, at the Halls Orchard, that is that does not have any native habitat around, and so the local pollinators are a little bit few and far in between. And so out there, I do contract with beekeepers to bring out their hives during pollination.
Oh, you have to do that.
Yeah, they drive them out when the bees, you know,
from
go into
where?
Their hives. I've got a couple of folks from around the Des Moines area that
Iowa bees.
They are
least.
Definitely Iowa bees. Yeah,
okay.
I think Norwalk is where most of my hives come from. So they, you know, when the bees are in their hives overnight, they just load them up on a trailer and drive them to me. And then by the time they come out of their
they wake
hives
up and
the
they're
next
in
morning,
an apple
they're
orchard.
In an orchard. Yeah,
Boop.
And then they go out and buzz around and pollinate all the flowers on the apple trees. And then when we're done with that, then they go back home.
And how long do they stay?
They usually stay about 3 weeks or so. Yeah. So not an incredibly long period of time. But because at Hall's Orchard we've got about 20 different varieties, and just like the ripening times,
right,
the flowering periods are
a little bit
different. So some of the early ones start, you know, flowering, and they won't even, you know, if I only had early apples and late apples, the pollination periods might not overlap. But we have the middle ones too, and so there's an apple trees blooming for at least 3 weeks, 4 weeks or so throughout May, typically.
Sounds like a well-designed orchard.
Yeah, it is. They did a great job picking out some cool varieties.
Good.
And I'm happy to be helping steward that.
Good. You work hard all summer in the spring with the bees, and then in the fall you're picking the fruit. But there's pruning and there's managing. That goes on all year or just at a certain time?
There are a lot of different times for pruning for different purposes.
Oh.
Most of the pruning that you would do, though, is when the trees are completely dormant in the wintertime. So after winter has settled in, after they've been cold for a certain period of time, typically that's like January is when you'd want to start pruning. Because if you prune too late in the year and they have kind of fresh cuts and open mm-hmm. wounds essentially before, and then all of a sudden you hit some sub-zero temperatures that can really harm the tree. So you don't want to prune too late in the fall or too early in the winter for those reasons. But so you would, yeah, pruning is a big project, and that happens for me primarily all of January and February and March. And
you can, in the real cold.
Yeah, yep. And you can prune right up until they start to leaf out, you mm-hmm. know, really in April.
Do you prune for the convenience of the picker or for the tree?
Very good question, because the answer is definitely both. You want to shape the tree so it's easier for you to manage, you know, so you can get to it easier. I think most importantly, though, you want to prune the tree so that it always gets adequate sunlight and airflow. So if it starts to get...
Keeps the fungus down with the airflow.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Growing apples in Iowa, there are...
It's wet.
Prone, yes, it's wet. There's always dew in the morning, and that will cause diseases. And so, yeah, apples are really prone to disease in Iowa. So the best way to manage that is to make sure that all of the water sprouts and all these little new, you know, pencil diameter, 1 to 2 foot tall growth, new limbs that come up every year, that you prune those out every winter. That will allow more sunlight and airflow to come in there. So in the early morning dew, it dries up as quick as possible. And then you want to take out any big limbs that are trying to shade out other limbs. So you really kind of have an open vase is the kind of shape of a tree that we usually go for at the Hall's Orchard and at my orchard, depending on the rootstock. For a semi-dwarf apple tree, typically you'd want kind of an open vase so there's no central leader in the middle.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's just limbs that go out in, yeah, an open direction.
And what's the normal height for a semi-dwarf?
Well, that, of course, even varies depending on the kind of semi-dwarf tree that you have. So I have a lot of the orchard at Rex's, at the Hall's Orchard, is on M111, which gets to be about, like, you know, 70% size of a full tree. And that can be, that can be
quite tall,
18 feet tall or so. And so that can also be about 18 feet wide. And then another semi-dwarf rootstock could be like M7. And M7 is one that is maybe only going to be 50% full size. And so that would be, you know, 12 to 15
okay,
feet tall.
Okay, so but you're
tall.
Still so all, in there with ladders doing all of this.
Well, so there's not necessarily because of the pruning. And so a lot of the limbs on these trees that don't have a central leader, they just go outwards and kind of wide. And so, you know, and then the fruit produce, you know, is not necessarily always on, it's not that hard to access from the ground because of the way that the shape, the tree will go wider than it will tall if you prune it that way.
So does that mean you keep cutting out the stuff in the center?
Yeah, essentially.
And encourage
yeah.
the wideness?
Right.
And you do that from the ground?
The pruning itself?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that depends. I mean, of course, we have ladders, and we'll certainly use ladders to get access to certain limbs of the tree that need to be out. But consistently pruning with the semi-dwarf trees, it you don't need to get up on ladders too often.
What about for picking?
Yeah, same goes with picking. There's some varieties that just tend to grow a little bit more limbs and more wide, and so certain varieties, even if it's on the same rootstock, do require, you know, ladders for picking and pruning. Some less.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What do you do with all the limbs that you cut off? Is there a market for apples? Sticks,
you know,
apple wood?
That's a good question. I have people ask me about that, and I'm happy to, you know, we don't, it's a lot of work for us to chip it, you know,
right. to
like
it.
Take, and then I also think some of the bigger limbs that are actually, you know, substantial size pieces, we don't have as much of that. We have a lot of those little water sprouts. When we prune, the ground below each tree is just littered with water sprouts. And those are small enough that we don't even bother picking up because the mower, they'll decompose, and then the mower is a mulcher that will just kind of chip them up, and it's good for the fungal duff on the orchard floor. And so we'll leave that stuff. And then the big limbs, we don't seem to get quite enough to make it worth, you know, doing marketing over
yeah,
it.
Yeah. But I'm thinking of
smoking fire. With apple wood.
Yeah,
smoking
yeah,
with
yeah,
apple
absolutely.
Wood. Well, there's always somebody that wants to try it, so
yep.
that's where it comes from. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at khoifm.org.
are back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking apples. Donna, you brought in a really good apple book. Give us the name.
Oh, right. This is by a man named Rowan Jacobson. He's in, I think, a Vermont apple farmer. It's Apples of Uncommon Character, 123 Heirlooms, Modern Classics, and Little Known Wonders. It's got gorgeous pictures of these unusual varieties.
Very good.
And a few recipes.
Very good. And I brought in a book. We had a woman on our show last year, and she's a Central Iowa person. She currently does not live in Central Iowa anymore, but she is working with apples and lots of other good organic fruits and vegetables. Her name is Susan Futrell. She wrote a book called Good Apples Behind Every Bite. It's a fine book about the business of apple orchards.
Yeah, the difficulties of smaller growers and keeping the the market is often flooded by big, rather commercial, boring apples, right, Steve?
Yeah, that's right. And related to that, one of the challenges this year has been actually the market is pretty flooded with apples from Washington because of trade wars and tariffs and whatnot.
Right. There
is a huge market that Washington normally accesses in China for their apples, but they're unable to do that. And so Hy-Vee's and other grocery stores are flooded with apples that are just dirt cheap. And
not necessarily the best tasting varieties.
No, not at all.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yes, so that's been a frustration this year.
That's what buying things locally, a good thing. Tell us the name of your orchard.
How do people find your apples?
Yeah, sure. So if you're in the Ames area, I do have my apples in at Wheatsfield, along with a number of other great orchards. And so if you go into Wheatsfield,
you can find a lot of local apples
there. A lot of
there.
Different varieties, too, that they choose.
Even the Hy-Vee and the Fairway have some. Mm-hmm. Fairway has some local apples, for sure.
Yep. So I've been really happy to work with Wheatsfield. Otherwise, my orchard store is open on the weekends, and this might be the last weekend, I think. But it'll be open Saturday and Sunday, and the address of that is 8810 Northwest 166th Avenue.
It's near Madrid, right?
Yeah, it's essentially between Madrid and Sheldahl, just outside of Sheldahl. So, it's a Madrid address, 8810 Northwest 166th. And I'll be there Saturday and Sunday this weekend, and the season is definitely winding down. We're done picking a couple weeks ago and just graded everything and sorted, and everything's boxed up and ready to go. And so we'll see how that goes. But this last weekend, we did just press a whole bunch of cider. So if you get there quickly, we might
have
some more.
Oh, you have a cider press there.
We do, yeah. Oh, and so we don't pasteurize it, so I can only give it out, and ask for a free will donation.
Oh, that's right. You can't sell it if it's not pasteurized.
It's not pasteurized.
It's fresh.
I've had some. It's really delicious.
Yeah. Good for
you. The other place, of course, is the U-Pick at Berry Patch out towards Nevada.
That's right.
They got to mention them. That's a very great place to go.
And Dean has been
there. If your children want to pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dean and Junie have been great mentors for me. Being a part of, Practical Farmers of Iowa, I'm a staff member. I'm also a member there. And that network of other apple growers has been huge for me to call up and to rely on and bounce questions
off. And, they have been doing it a long time, and they are very generous in sharing their knowledge.
Absolutely.
Particularly with younger farmers.
Keep those apples going. It is a long time commitment. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for growing these apples.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be a part of it and to share the story and to help, be a champion for
local apples.
We've got
a good apple season here in Iowa. Everybody just eat.
Right. Keep going.
They're the best now.
I do love apple pie.
Oh, I love apple everything.
Very good. I'm going to put a little poem in here. If this actually is election day, local elections here
in Central
Iowa.
Vote, everybody, vote.
And I have a little a little poem here I want to share. Actually, it's sort of a devotional, a thought sort of process for good thought. It's sort of a prayer. But I thought, the election day could use this. And believe it or not, the author of this poem is Philip Appleman.
Okay, you got the theme going.
Here's a little poem. My thoughts and anyone's thoughts on election day and our current state of the world. Oh, karma, dharma, pudding and pie, give me a break before I die. Grant me wisdom, will and wit, purity, probity, pluck and grit. trustworthy, loyal, helpful, and kind. Give me great abs and a steel trap mind. And forgive ye. Forgive, ye gods, some humble advice. These little blessings would suffice to beget an earthly paradise. Make the bad people good and the good people nice. And before our world goes over the brink, teach the believers how to think.
That's
a little
wonderful.
A little thought for our current state of the world. Don't just hide your head. Get out there and
voting is the least you can do. Okay.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? We've got a few upcoming sort of events here. The Ames Public Library is having a book sale coming up this week, Thursday, November 7th, Friday the 8th, Saturday the 9th, and Sunday the 10th. The Thursday, there's a $2 admission, and then it gets better. Friday and Saturday, free admission. And Sunday, believe it or not, admission is $1 and everything is free. Now, do they want you to read books or what? That is the Ames Public Library. They do have really fine book sales, and I always go and kind of slap through the racks, and I kind of have this need to have a certain poundage of books by my desk all the time.
Yeah, well, the outflow is, you know, you get them in, and then I take them back to the library to be sold
That's
at the book sale.
Fine. That is just fine. Great. And, along with our Apple theme here, Cynthia McClure had a fine engineer here, mentioned that Thursday, November 7th at Ryman Gardens, 1:30 to 3:30, there will be a pruning workshop. So there is a little
good
trick
idea.
To it. There's a little trick to it, but once you got it, you can do it.
And it's not just apple trees that need pruning. So
find out. Ryman Gardens here at the ISU campus. Find out about pruning. And there is an upcoming event. Iowa Farmers Union is having a Foodie Fest 19 for the Iowa Farmers Union. That is Thursday, November 21st, 2019 in Des Moines. And you can contact iowafarmersunion.org for that information. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thanks to our guest, Steve Carlton. And about the music today, it's a contra dance music. It's music to move your feet to. You've heard Miss Gayton's Hornpipe, The Flowers of Autumn, and we'll go out with a tune called The Mad River. Yes, we will. Find out more about this show and this fine radio station at khoifm.org. This is community radio, and fundraiser starts tomorrow. This is a community supported organization, so beat the rush. Beat the rush and get your membership.
Send your membership funds in.
To do that, you can go to khoifm.org, and right there on the first page, you come to, there is this button that you can poke. It's called the donate button, and we would appreciate your support because that's what keeps the lights on here. That's what keeps the lights on. If we are in your ears, put us in your heart. Support this radio station. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We have fine engineering by Cynthia. And lots of other good things, too, from Cynthia. Eat good food and enjoy life.